Oh, hey, how are you? Great to hear. Yeah, come in. Make yourself comfortable. Like a drink? Sure. There you go. Welcome to the Tech Lounge. Shall we begin?
Okay.
Hey, Kate, how are you doing?
Very well, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, good. I had a... Well, you know this. I mean, we revealed that we're married yesterday. I had a sleep test last night and it was weird. And I've just been a bit out of sorts all day. So. But I'm getting there. Listening to lots of weird drone music to help me focus.
That sounds tiring.
Oh, that's fine. Working on my book. I feel like my book on sustainable computing is a nice... It's a sort of indirect tie-in to what we're going to talk about because... I think on this episode, we're going to dig a little bit into, there's many aspects, but two of the aspects of maybe when the tech industry is a little less honest than it could be, a little less authentic than it could be, even though it's one of those that always claims to be.
What, we're not really all families?
Well, yeah. So we're going to talk about tech layoffs and a particular kind of scoop you had. Nothing new, but there's obviously been a wave of them recently. And I want to talk about what even is tech anyway? What is a tech company? It's an idea I've touted around a lot and I feel like it's worthwhile dredging up again for another conversation.
Okay. Sounds good.
But before we do, I feel like there's a few people at the door who would just like to say hello. And tell you a few things. If you don't want to hear those interruptions, then subscribe to the show. You can find out details in the show notes. And you'll hear more of Kate and I talking, not people shouting adverts at you.
Yep, the volume will stay the same. So you won't be awoken in your doze by a shouty ad.
There is a terrible ad for the Bayern Lotto at the moment.
I was going to say, is it German?
On all the BBC podcasts.
I knew it was that one.
It's incredibly loud.
It's so
loud.
It
starts with this rather creepy guy saying, hey, Schatz, which is darling, but he just doesn't sound very convincing at all. And she's like, oh, I don't know what to get my family for Christmas. He's like, why did you get them a lottery ticket? They're like, what the hell?
I keep getting a Shopify one.
Oh, yeah. And then there's this bit at the end where it says, the Bayern, which is German for Bavaria, Bayern Lotto wishes you enjoy your next podcast. Like, you'd enjoy the damn sight more if you weren't shouting in my ear. But anyway, anyway, we'll be back shortly. So, Kate, you had a little bit of an exclusive, I think, the past couple of weeks. Do you want to fill people in on what that specifically was about? And then we'll lead into the kind of broader topic.
Yeah, this was, we often as journalists get contacted by, I guess, whistleblowers, people that are anonymous sources, people that are close to companies, people that are in companies that don't want to share who they are or their position, etc. Sometimes investors, that happens quite a bit. And this one was a conversational marketing platform called Spectrum.
I mean, it already sounds wonderful, but yes.
And it's one of the many startups I deal with a name that is not spelt how they sound. So it's Spec, SPECTRM.
Spectrum, yep.
Which is slightly better than Spectrum without the E also. So that could have been worse. And basically the story is that they filed preliminary bankruptcy proceedings for their German subsidiary at the end of October. And the issue for the Berlin-based staff is that there was no advance notice of this given to the non-executive staff. And the message I was told, and I quote, everyone was kept in the dark until the founders shared the news via a company-wide Slack message. Founders assured the team everything was fine, then blindsided everyone with a Slack message out of nowhere. Obviously, don't want this news out there, but I think it's important for others to know what happened here. So I think my first question to you is, if you've ever been in a company that's reduced staffing or laid people off, as opposed to being fired, which is a different thing, I guess. Do you have any examples yourself where it was done poorly?
Not really. I think in the past couple of years where I could have been the victim of that, I was already kind of out and working for myself. So I probably indirectly by just, you know, hiring, slowing down. Not really, no. I think I was lucky. I've obviously known, I've worked for companies that maybe did that later. And of course, like you have here, known plenty of people who have been in that situation. How big was this company? How big is this company, by the way?
Reasonable size. Let me have a look. Give me a sec. I can find that out for you. I mean, in the interim, I have been let go for financial reasons from more than one company. I think the record was during COVID where I think three, maybe four of the publications I wrote for closed down.
Yeah. But you were a freelancer, weren't you?
Yeah, correct. So, but that's still a fairly weighty number.
Yeah.
Yeah, this company has it now has about 60, 70 employees, but it's a international company with a Delaware, of course, as well. So people are kind of spread out. But yeah, I mean, I've had everything from mostly it's just an email message.
Yeah.
Hey, we've closed down.
Yeah.
There you go. And that's about it. To, let's see, when I was a student, I was a high school student actually, worked for a department store and we found out we're losing our jobs in the newspaper. So I think for a lot of people, when I started working on this article, I was like, okay, I can just announce, okay, this company has shed some staff and they've done it in a way that staff aren't very happy. I'm sure that's not an uncommon experience in startup land, but I thought about it in terms of, well, let's dig into that a bit and we can talk a bit more about that. But let's also think about how are there ways that a company can do this better so that even if people are getting fired, it's a better experience than it could be. So, yeah, I mean, in terms of modalities of the firing, quite a common one I've heard, and it's happened to a lot of people I know, people discover their job is no longer there when they can't log into their social media.
Yeah.
That seems to happen quite a bit. Yeah. I guess, you know, if you're, for example, if you're managing the company's social media, in some ways that's probably a good idea that you don't want someone, you know, there may be a distance between the time that it takes
the worst is sometimes when they just disconnect your email or something because that feels.
Disconnecting the email is a really common one. Yeah. And I think it's like, you know, we don't want you to take any company secrets.
Yeah.
And so I always advise people, firstly, if you're a writer, do not write in the company platform.
Sometimes you have to as well. That's also an agreement.
No, but your drafts, you should write them in your personal email.
Yeah. Sometimes, that's actually against requirements. You might sign in a contract sometimes, but yeah.
Well, I mean, it's my research.
Yeah. But actually on the kind of legal side of things, if someone gives you this news, how do you avoid getting you or the outlet into trouble with reporting this?
Well, it's factual news.
But is it? I mean, okay, not is it. I mean, obviously it happened, but you're basing it on the opinions of others. How are you sure?
Well, I contacted the company and asked for comment.
Oh, you did? Okay. And did they respond?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. Yeah. And did they verify everything?
Not exactly. Yeah. Look, basically the CEO of this company said one of our German subsidiaries is going through a preliminary insolvency as part of a restructure. Spectrum Limited is a Delaware-based company. It's not insolvent. And to be very clear, I did not say they were bankrupt. I said they were in a bankruptcy process. This, to be very clear, is not uncommon with startups. We saw this with not scale-ups as well. Obviously, Northvolt recently, where they will be entering some of the processes. We saw it a few weeks back when we were talking about mobility, where they had reduced some of their subsidiaries.
Yeah.
So this is what happens. It's a process. Sometimes it is done temporarily, sometimes permanently. But again, it was not just the issue. Yeah. It was that people, you know, are a few weeks out from Christmas and they don't have jobs.
It so often happens at the end of the, I think it's because of the financial year and people are a bit blind to the fact financial year also equals, you know, December is an expensive time for people and they kind of forget.
And people, I mean, one of the sources around this has said to me, you know, their issue was that there was a lack of transparency about the company's financial health, that they felt the company should have known where they are at.
Yeah.
Because, and you know, and that they blame the founders for that because, you know, they think that, you know, they're trying to present this message to the world and probably to the team, which is not what it was.
Yeah.
And there was also a story in November, late November, Adjust, which was a mobile app marketing kind of company that had actually been acquired last year, I think it was. They had laid off over 300 people, and that was by an automated pre-recorded message from the CEO.
Yeah.
When people, and then people were locked out of their devices.
Yeah. And bear in mind, I mean, I don't know how you what happened in this particular instance, that Germany generally has very, sometimes excessively strong employee rights. So, you know, what happened here? How could they get away with it, I suppose, is the question.
I mean, firstly, you can do that.
Yeah.
You're allowed to do that. But it gets
worse. So just to clarify, you're allowed to do what?
Fire people, however, by voicemail.
Yeah, but I mean, you have like notice periods and things. Do they count in this case or...?
Well, with this one, firstly, what happened was that some of the staff got a call the following day saying they'd made a mistake when they were rehired.
How many people accepted that?
I can't speak to that on air. It's, you know, the person didn't want me to say publicly, but let's just say one or more. Let's just, we're offered that.
Yeah.
And to be very clear, in this instance, people were paid the appropriate severance.
In
compliance with German law.
So it could have been worse, I suppose.
Oh, 100%. I mean, this is something that did come up when I was sort of researching around this area and asking people that I knew in the startup ecosystem was that a lot of people felt that the startups they worked at were trying to trick people into signing termination agreements without giving severance.
Yeah.
People felt there was gaslighting, particularly when you have, you know, companies that have raised a million plus and you have a head of people that says, oh, we didn't know this was the law, and the only recourse has been, you know, hiring a lawyer to get their severance and so forth. You know, the money, you know, your notice money and all that stuff. And the reason they say, well, it's not an honest mistake is because it happened to someone after them.
Yeah.
So they can't claim ignorance if it's happened more than once, you know.
So,
I mean, look, to bring it all together. So basically I also reached out to a bunch of people in HR tech and sort of, you know, both startups and, you know, people making software and platforms and all this sort of stuff to make people's jobs easier in terms of recruiting and maintaining staff and all that sort of thing. And everyone was pretty appalled by these experiences. Yeah. Everybody, actually. Everyone said, you know, that there's a huge problem with your company and its culture if, you know, a bankruptcy is not being shared.
Yeah.
You know, that's something that, you know, you need to keep the staff abreast of this sort of thing with transparent communication.
Yeah.
And the other reasoning around this is also the idea that, well, you may be able to identify people may be able to identify areas of wastage within a company where they can reduce costs.
Yeah.
So, you know, encouraging people to be doing those sorts of things. And there may be people that are willing to take a redundancy early or something like that.
Exactly. You
know?
Yeah.
So without making it a, you know, I think an all company fear fest, I guess, you know.
Yeah.
The other thing that people really stressed to me was that the lack of support for the people left behind in companies.
Yeah.
Where often, I don't know, I've been in this situation more than once where people leave and you're expected to do their job and your own. And because they've left and their accounts have been deleted, there's no handover at all. And to be very clear, this is more common in the freelance world because there often is no notice periods. Or the notice periods are very short, or people choose not to take them and that's not followed up, you know. So, you know, this idea that people are left behind and then it's often like, yeah, we've sacked you and now we're having a Christmas party. Merry Christmas.
You want to come, don't you?
I mean, I had a situation where a company I worked for fired half the laid off, to be exact, half the staff for financial reasons a week or two before our annual conference, which meant that we were required to take on their moderating, not only their moderating, you know, tasks on the stage, but also, you know, in the context of a conference being the time when you're meant to sort of celebrate your company, it was very hard to feel any interest. I've got to say, to be blunt. So this stuff happens across, you know, all sectors. The other one I would say is, you know, people really felt about, well, you know, it should be the managers who are taking responsibility for this, not leaving it to middle management to do all the layoffs, particularly if it's a smaller company.
Yeah.
And we've all seen the stories where somebody has, you know, downsized their company, but the founders are nowhere to be found. Yeah. They're not on social media. They're not, they're not, you know, they're not taking interviews or quote, what have you, with journalists. And you discover that they're actually on social media, taking on Instagram, sharing photos of their holiday somewhere.
Yep.
Which is pretty brutal.
I feel like the broad question here is, why do you think so many companies / people are so bad at this?
Ego, I think. And look, to be fair, I mean, one of the people I interviewed about this, we spoke at length. He was not only a, you know, HR tech CEO and founder, but he'd been in this position of having to let people go.
Yep.
And he was very mindful of, you know, for him it was you feel like a failure, you know, it feels like this huge thing where you've really worked very hard to get the best people and to help those people grow your company, and then you feel like you failed them.
Yep.
And that being a really big deal. I wish all founders had that much integrity,
because
I don't feel they do, unfortunately.
Do you know if this person had to handle this kind of process and how they handled it?
The person who had to lay people off, is that what you mean, that I interviewed?
The person that said was better. How did they handle it?
Yeah, very sensitively. Basically things like warm introductions, so introducing people to people at other companies, empowering giving your company's your employees time to look for jobs on company time, perhaps.
Okay, interesting.
Maybe offering some type of classes for, you know, upskilling or helping with CVs or what have you, references. All these sorts of things, you know, are all possible, particularly if you work in sectors like I do and you do, where everyone knows everyone. Yeah. So, you know, it's kind of...
True. I'm looking for some work at the moment. And obviously there's jobs I come across where I know people who do or have worked there. And, you know, you ask them, why did you leave? And you get responses.
Too.
And word travels. Yeah.
Definitely. It also comes up, I think, with salaries. Yeah. So, you know, so often we know with companies nowadays they won't disclose a salary in the advertising and they expect you to come up with a number.
Sometimes it's a legal requirement. I actually like it when companies are transparent because it gives you an idea up front. Yeah.
It also depends. It also gives you an idea of what level person they want, so that overqualified people aren't applying or vice versa.
Because not every company puts layers on things, especially in the tech sector. Sometimes you have like junior, nothing, senior, staff, lead, and other times it's just like IC level, and that's internal, and you don't really know. It's just relative, and everyone has the same job title, but you have like a grading, so you don't always really know what the title could mean. So
And I mean, this was overall sort of a sentiment that I felt with the people I was talking to. You know, if this is done well, I mean, people may not, you know, want to accept the decision, but they can acknowledge if it's done well, and they can have a bit of respect around that and a bit of dignity, I guess. So I think that's, you know, that's really important as well.
Yeah, for sure. It sort of feeds a lot into some of the concern I've had, and this period of time has definitely shown this quite a lot. Where, you know, a lot of companies, I mean, we know tech, but I'm pretty sure it's the same in many other any other sectors.
I think so.
A lot of companies, they'll have these values. They'll say we value people, we value the environment, we value blah 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 blah. And then when the shit hits the fan, you realize that all that's really valued most of the time is money, and everything else falls secondary to that. And you've seen that a lot in recent months, where it's like, we value people. People are like family. Oh, bye-bye. We don't value you that much. Why do you think companies continue to do this when we see increasingly, sorry, it's just crap? And people
because they get away with it.
Crap.
Ultimately, they get away with it.
Yeah.
Most people, I think they're betting on the idea that most people won't complain, particularly in the current job market, where for a lot of people, including people in more senior roles, it has been quite hard to change jobs.
I can vouch for that at the moment, because I am potentially looking for senior roles, and it takes longer. So, yeah.
Yeah, it takes a lot longer. Yeah. And I know that from the group I run, there are some people in the group who've applied for, you know, 50-plus jobs and they're eminently qualified.
Yeah.
And it's often based on those less tangible things like, you know, how old are the people in the startup, for example, company culture, et cetera, et cetera.
Yes.
Yeah, I also think there is an element of in international cities of preying on migrants who don't know the laws and the assumption that they'll just go along with it, particularly if their visa is tied to their job.
Exactly.
Which is an issue.
And that is a big problem. It's a little less in Europe, but this has happened in America where you can literally lose your job and the next day have to leave the country, which is kind of 100%, insane.
100%. Yeah, and this is – well, this is what happened with Twitter when it was still Twitter.
Yeah.
Just before it became X, I think, with the layoffs there, a lot of people were kind of felt forced to stay because of that reason, you know, even though all the people that sort of had integrity left. You know, you saw staff photos with like, you know, this is the team now, our lean team, and it's like, yeah, they're all kind of, I think they're probably all migrants, you know.
And you don't mean that in a negative way, of course. You mean
not the slightest, but I mean there were people that – weren't in the same equal standing in terms of their employment rights.
Yeah, exactly. They are tied to a role far more than others. And also in America, you have the whole thing with health insurance. I think because of the algorithms, I've just seen quite a large amount on LinkedIn recently of people who've been looking for work for 6 months in the States. And in Europe, depending on the country, you would worry about that a bit, but not so much. But there, it's like once your health insurance is up, or once your employment benefit is up, that's it. You know?
Yeah.
And in a market like this, what do you do?
Yeah. That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, these are not entirely nice conversations to have, but I think they're an important ones, particularly right now where a lot of people, you know, we're in a society where for most people that don't come from a privileged background, our sense of security and probably identity and maybe worth in some instances, in some respects, is tied to our jobs.
Yeah.
You know, these kind of things matter.
Yeah.
You know?
As some of that really fits into the whole just sort of blinkered, this is sort of transitioning slowly into the next topic, but this kind of way of that tech people sometimes have this tendency to think of, how do we say this, of like in very black and white ways. So, you know, there's a classic example, another Berlin company, the Klarna, which again, it's I feel like it is no coincidence that so many of these companies, the product is not particularly.
Is it very disruptive compared to its?
Just in terms of, you know, you talked about marketing. I mean, who really needs more marketing? And Klarna is a pay later service, which has its problems as well. You know, I'm just saying that they're not necessarily companies that have the best of intentions in the first place. Shall we be blunt? So, you know, and there was also a story from a few months ago where the founder, CEO, I'm not completely sure of that, said, oh, we could just replace half the staff with chatbots and then did that.
That was Klarna.
That was Klarna, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Or, and I mean, that was, to be sort of clear, was people that were, what do you call them, remote workers in places like India and Asia.
That's not strictly true. I know people who work there. Huh. And that's not strictly true, no.
That's even worse, I guess.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then another example is a little different, but, you know, in the similar mindset, like the statement from the Spotify CEO of, oh, the cost of content creation is basically zero, and that's pretty much what we're going to pay you, artists. And it's just this kind of like, sometimes these statements that are made in this very practical kind of engineering mindset without ever really thinking of the human reaction to that, shall we say? So that kind of thing, I think, is what I mean. Yeah, it could be very blinkered sometimes, is what I mean.
I think so.
Yeah, and I just sort of wonder where it comes from. I feel like a lot of it is that engineering mindset sometimes where it's just, oh, this is a fact. What's the problem? I'd be like,
yeah. I mean, are they the people that should be managing money? You know what I mean? Like, because they're very different. I would assume there's some differences in skill sets, right?
It doesn't really matter, does it? That's the thing.
Yeah, true.
It doesn't really matter if they are suitable. They are the ones doing it. So
yeah.
What could you do? I think you only published it yesterday, but have you had any kind of response, recourse, sharing of similar stories, etc.?
Yeah, there's always. Yeah, I've had a couple of people have shared similar experiences.
So, okay. Yeah. That was suitably uncommunicative, Kate. Just like a company that is liable to. No, anyway.
Yeah, let's just say they weren't for public discussion.
Really? Well, what do you mean? And how would you differentiate? Without naming names, like, how do you differentiate why one is and why one isn't, out of interest?
What do you mean?
Why is the one that you've published is okay for public discussion, but others?
No, I mean, I guess it was about scale.
What do you mean?
Like, you know, a company letting go a ton of people badly versus one person.
Okay. I suppose scale is also dependent on the company size. You know, 200 people letting go 10%.
And you know, the companies I mentioned explicitly had raised money in the last year.
Mm.
One had been acquired. So,
I mean, funding may sound like a lot, but it doesn't always last very long.
Very true.
$1 million for a 200-person company. It's not.
Oh, they raised more than that.
But you get my point. It's not actually as much as it may sound. That's the depressing thing. So, okay. On the subject of depressing amounts of money, let's make tea money, and it's time for some ads.
So, what would you like to talk about, Chris? Tell me all.
Yeah, I think this relates a little bit to what we spoke about, more around the kind of honesty of marketing and communication, I suppose. And it's something that I covered it also a little bit when we were talking about events a few weeks ago. And it is something I've written about before, but I felt like bringing it back up. And that is, what is a tech company? I feel like this is an analogous and comparable, comparable to, you know, I feel like this happens less than it used to. But in the past, when you'd say, I work in IT, meaning I'm a programmer. And then your uncle would say, oh, can you fix my printer? And you'd be like, not really. That's not really what I do. And there's this kind of assumption that they're all sort of one and the same thing. And I sort of feel like it's similar with tech. A lot of people say, I work for a tech company. Like, do you? Or do you just use technology? Because I feel like, you know, I think you and I can just about remember when work didn't involve computers, like barely.
Oh, I can.
The very beginning of our careers.
I can remember quite well, actually.
Yeah, but it was probably a very short period of our career. And to the point where now it's almost omnipresent unless you're doing kind of manual work or customer service. But even then, you're still using tills, scanners, card readers, et cetera, et cetera. Like almost every job is using ICT technology somehow, when previously there was an analog input. You know, do you remember the old card readers with the carbon copy piece of paper, that kind of stuff?
I do. Yeah.
So just because you use smart devices, are you a tech company? Because I feel like that term is overused. And often we go to tech conferences and I'm kind of like, you're a marketing company. You're an HR company. You're a whatever company. You're not a tech company. To me, a tech company is a company that makes the stuff that people use. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I guess the barometer I use, because it does come up, is the difference. I'm primarily focusing on startups, and I kind of look at them in terms of there are startups that are very explicitly tech, and then there are probably the other category would be maybe health or social impact, where it may not be as inherently obvious. Like, oh, what's an example? I don't know. Makeup. Mm-hmm. You're making makeup.
Right? Yeah.
While there will be some companies that are doing it in a disruptive way, for example, creating at a sort of biotech level, a biotech could be something else that comes up, of course, creating new dyes or new pigments or, you know, new ways of doing sustainability. There would be companies where it is just two or three people making makeup, you know. But sometimes there is a good story there. There's a founder story, for example. There's a kind of a lesson in how someone's able to get funding and how they're able to work with investors. So it can be, you know, sometimes it's less, you know, about the tech but about the people, if that makes sense.
You actually bring up an interesting point though, because with my bias, when I am talking about what is a tech company, I'm thinking software and sort of vaguely associated with tech. But if you're making makeup, from substances, chemical engineering, et cetera, et cetera. That in itself is also a tech company, really.
Well, same with pharma, right?
Yeah, well, it's essentially the same business, shall we be skeptical and say.
Sure.
And I don't know, even if you wanted to get into making food, is that a tech company? I don't know.
It depends. I do cover a lot of food tech.
Yeah.
Maybe not as much this year, but I probably
What's will talk food about tech? That. When is food it's tech about, not just hospitality
or making bread
or you know what I mean?
Well, no, that's not what I cover.
No, but I'm just trying to understand what's the difference. When is a food tech company?
Well, it's about a company creating not just – like I'm not just creating chocolate.
Mm.
I'm creating a chocolate out of chickpeas that has no cocoa in it.
Okay. So if you're doing something different.
You're going to have to do
– just finding new processes or things like that.
Yeah, novel ingredients, ingredient development, where they're probably going to be using a lot of tech to do the processing and so forth. They're going to be building factories. They're going to be doing all that sort of side of it, the supply chain side of it. I mean, it's not necessarily inherently the tech side of it that's the most interesting. It is that they've created this kind of chocolate.
Yeah.
And it's got that environmental impact. You know, it's not taking cocoa, which is a limited substance, which is also very expensive. It's reducing the amount of water used, all this sort of stuff.
Yeah.
So when you come back, to sustainability, which of course is a reoccurring and chronic problem or issue rather for all companies now, because there are going to be, if they're not already in their industry, mandates where they do have to do certain things, and that's a fact.
Yeah.
And for a lot of the companies concerned that we write about, the startups, that's enabled them to come out into the sun, so to speak. Often it's a bunch of, people at university with an idea someone who's been, in a lab doing something. And then you've got this, scope 3 emission stuff and net zero, and then they're able to go,
It's funny you mentioned that. It's a slight tangent, but it's kind of a tangle of tangents. Ooh, a tangle of tangents. I like that phrase. So I'm working on this sustainability and tech book. I was at an event last week, and we have left it rather open in the whole book of what are we talking about? Because a lot of people talk about the carbon impact of the internet, and then other people talk about the carbon impact of whatever. And so this term ICT, which is an old term that we used to call like learning computers when we were at school, information communications technology. Mm. So what even are we covering right here? Because the internet is just one thing. It's just, again, this confabulation. People tend to think of technology as just the internet, but it's not. It's way bigger than that. The web isn't even the internet. The internet is more than the web and et cetera, et cetera. And so it goes. So what even is tech? When we talk about tech, we're thinking of, I don't know what we're thinking of, to be honest with you, because I will think generally of software and maybe the hardware that software runs on. You talk about food tech, pharma tech, ag tech, property tech, et cetera, et cetera.
All of it.
So what even is tech?
A lot of it, and a lot of the companies, if I was to say structurally, it's a sizable amount of the companies concerned that I'm talking to in this context are software companies.
Yeah.
So they're food tech, but they're software.
But so let's dig into that one, because I think this is where we can at least come to some – I don't think we could solve this problem in one podcast, but we could come to maybe some common agreement on a subset. So let's talk about software. People making and using software. Okay. So if you use, I don't know. Let's think. If you use an inventory program to sell, I don't know, to sell t-shirts.
Yep. Okay.
You design the t-shirts in InDesign, whatever. You use Squarespace to make a website. You use it to sell the website. You use Stripe to take payments. You use some kind of logistics software to handle postage and all this kind of stuff. All you ever really do is pack them, design them, handle questions, things like that.
Yep.
Are you a tech company?
No.
No, I don't think so. No. You're just using technology. You're using technology quite effectively, and it's helping you run your business. Your business would not exist without it. But I don't think you're a tech company, are you?
Yeah, you'd have to do something else, like maybe a corresponding app that you've developed that connects to the t-shirts and does something interesting.
Yeah. Okay.
Maybe it's giving the t-shirts, I don't know, their carbon emissions count.
Or maybe it's an LED you can change the phrase on it, something like that.
Yeah, whatever. Or it's got a QR code or something.
Then you're a fashion tech company. Yeah?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. What about you make plugins for Atlassian software? Are you a tech company?
Yeah.
Okay. I picked that one intentionally because you're making something new, but yeah, maybe I was a bit contrary.
Yeah, it's enterprise software. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Or software for enterprise. I mean, there's loads of B2B companies.
Yeah. How about if you resell other people's software, which is less common these days, but it still exists? Are you a tech company? Yeah. Are you just
you're a sales tech company? Yeah.
Sales tech. Okay.
Although you're not making tech for sales, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like for salespeople.
So I guess we could argue that if you are using technology as either as a fundamental part of business. No, hang on. No, that's not right. So, okay. I think we've kind of come to a loose definition here. So if you are using technology to do something new, if you are maybe adding to technology to do something different with it, if you are leveraging technology in a novel way, and that technology, in this particular case, we're talking about software. So if you just use Microsoft Office, you're not a tech company. If you build things for Microsoft Office, if you build additions to Microsoft Office, you are a tech company. Yeah. Very dependent on another company, but yes.
I mean, probably the most common example would be SaaS. So
you
have created software that does something for somebody, particularly like a business, and you offer that through a subscription
model. And even a consultant, even someone just doing like SharePoint installations or something is effectively a tech company.
But my question to you would be, given you raised the topic, why does it matter?
Okay, this is a good point. And anyone who is not watching, because no one is, there was a cat around. You might have heard some bumps on Kate's microphone.
Let me just move the glass.
Yes. Why does it matter? Well, it doesn't matter as much as anything matters. But the reason it comes into my mind is I do sometimes, and this came up in a previous conversation, when we go to a tech conference.
Mm.
And I don't feel like it's a tech conference because people are not talking about how they built or used the technology. They're often talking about sales, marketing, how they raise money, how they hire and fire people, et cetera, et cetera. So I don't think it should be called a tech conference. I don't know what it should be called, but...
Well, it's more like a startup conference.
Sure, but why don't they use that word then?
Because there's also scale-ups.
But that,
and often the people that are doing the guests may be at an enterprise level who are talking to other people at that level, you know, or investors, for example. I know, I get what you mean, but I think that would be why. But like, it's like if they get some, I don't know, some rapper out on the stage.
Some rapper.
I don't know. Sorry. And you kind of go, he's got a sneaker company. What does that matter?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, but it depends on the sneakers, of course.
But then you go, oh, hang on, he's using rubber made out of, I don't know, tires.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah,
he's got there's an NFT attached to them, or it's part of a, you know,
Trump is a tech company.
The sales go to teaching people to read. I don't know.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah.
So sometimes it is that storytelling, and I think sometimes you need these big picture people to give ideas as well.
For sure.
That said, I've got to hate. I did go to a conference a little while back where one of the speakers was a motivational speaker who was basically talking about, some swimming thing, like, you know, swimming in cold water or some crap.
Oh, yeah, makes you
and
a man,
it was a
Kate.
Bit like, and it was obviously, it was very polished and obviously he'd done the same talk many times, you could tell.
Yeah.
And it was a bit like, these are the struggles I had, swimming in cold water and getting up at 4 a.m.
That was your choice.
That was a bit like, I get the idea how somehow these are supposed to be transferable lessons to your life or whatever.
Are they though?
I just find it really disingenuous and quite condescending.
Yes. Okay. This is actually a really nice point to maybe round out this conversation. And also it relates directly back to what you were talking about, this disingenuousness, this dishonesty, that in some respects I wonder if that time of plastering over your t-shirt, your LinkedIn profile, we're a tech company because it was cool, it meant something, blah, 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 is sort of coming to an end. because there has been an increasing amount of conversation, of backlash against tech. And certain personalities, like the tech bro personality, it's almost splintering off into people who don't give a shit and will be even more tech bro-y. You know, we know some of the places you can find them, to the people who reject it completely and not a lot in between. And I sort of wonder if companies will – terminology is important and words are important, as you said. You know, the way you say things and handle things is important. As much as it may seem like, what does it matter? It can come back to bite you. And I wonder if some companies that, you know, aren't what people traditionally think of tech companies, but previously they were calling themselves that, will start using different terminology now. Because it's not as – doesn't have the positive permutations as it did. What do you think? most of Kate's greed is obscured by a cat right now. So she's struggling to give a serious response to it.
Cat butt alert.
I'm not going to edit this out. What is tech but cats?
Well, I have a bit about pet tech over the years.
So yeah, so do you think people might start using different words?
Nope.
I mean, what else could you use, I suppose? We are a pet engineering company.
Does that sound any better? I mean, a lot of people use AI or biotech, something tech, biotech, prop tech, you know, green tech, clean tech.
Does that make you less of a bro just by not being pure tech though? I don't know.
I mean, I think a lot of people have turned away from the bro idea. I think we have seen a shift. I think maybe
it's splintering.
A lot of those, dare I say, cocky young graduates who would, you know, start a company with a laptop, usually a software company or an app or something, and get, you know, funding very easily back in, you know, the late noughts tens or the early 20s, have had a very hard awakening over the last couple of years. And so I think now, all the investors I know are looking more for, you know, impact companies, high impact.
Well, that's good.
Whether it's financial impact or it's some other impact, you know.
Will hopefully mean that what we end up with will be more considered, more impactful, more meaningful.
Yeah, and I think from that we're seeing a different kind of founder. Obviously I'm not saying everybody, because that's never the case, right? We can't speak for everybody in a sector, in all these different verticals within tech. But, you know, just the fact of university spin-outs becoming such a big thing now.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I mean, that's nothing new, though. I mean,
No. It's not. Yeah, but you know, it's kind of the onslaught of educated people that, you know, they're used to dealing with.
Can we use a different phrase here? Because educated is a bit of a sound of privilege. Say
no. Let me finish what I'm going to say. I'm talking mostly. These are often people at the PhD level who've worked in labs and stuff like that. So they're often they've been a tutor. They've managed students at some level. They've defended their ideas to their peers. It's sort of a different skill set. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously you don't need to be a PhD student to get, you know, to start a startup. No. Of course not.
Yeah. But considered and intentional, I think, is a good way to put it. Be that through education, through life experience, whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, we spoke a couple of weeks ago, which will be a separate episode, to a woman doing breast cancer research. Mm. And she's coming to that from a personal story.
Lived experience,
probably didn't study it or anything like that.
No, totally. Yeah. I don't mean you have to study it, everything.
Yeah. Is that more considered? I think you're right. Mm. Cool. Okay. Well, if people want to send you tales of being fired or give us their proposals for what is tech, does it matter? Probably doesn't. But anyway, I like to argue these things. It's the Philosophical Lounge. How could people get in touch with you, Kate?
I'll give you a new one today, Blue Sky. Ooh. I did a little call out today to see who's on Blue Sky, because at the moment – hang on. Let me move the cat. You might be surprised to know, most of the content I get on Blue Sky is American.
Yeah.
Or it's cats. And so I'm putting together a little list of Europeans to kind of follow, if you like, people in the European tech scene. Using that term very broadly, obviously, that will be a work in progress. So I did a little call out today on LinkedIn. So therefore you can follow me on either of those. And how about yourself?
I'm almost Christian Schiller on almost everything, including Blue Sky. Mm-hmm. The only place I'm not Christian Schiller is Twix, where I'm Chris Chidge, and I can't remember why.
You're still using it?
Very rarely. I've actually uninstalled it from my computer because I just kept getting all these annoying notifications. Or you can find me at chrisdechiller.com. I think we'll probably have one more episode. I think it actually 2 weeks' time will be Christmas. So maybe we'll pre-record and put out like an end of the year episode or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We could also maybe, I don't know, maybe do something like Christmas gifts. Tech gifts.
Yeah, why not? Let's.
I often see a lot of, you know, I like my hardware. See some cool hardware stuff.
Let's do that, Kate. Let's plan to do that. We'll have Christmas theme music. We'll have tinsel. We have mince pies. I bought mince pies back from the UK.
There will be Glühwein.
Glühwein.
All around. Good.
And probably lots of cats.
And we may even make a video of that one so we could include the cats saying Merry Christmas to you.
Let's do that, Kate.
Sounds good.
Thank you very much for joining me in the Tech Lounge today. And we will see you all again very soon. Take care, everybody.
Bye.
So that was it. That was our guest today. Thank you very much for joining me in the Tech Lounge. I have been Christian Schiller. If you want to know more about Tech Lounge, head on over to christianschiller.com or please tell your friends about us. It's quiet and cozy in here, but the more listeners, the merrier. You can find more at christianschiller.com/podcast or in the show notes or episode notes, wherever you found this podcast. Thank you very much for joining me, and you're most welcome next time.